This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. I'm your host, your foliage upon Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I am joined by the very autumnal Stagger Lee Malone. How are you, my friend?
I don't feel autumnal.
Do you not? I feel like summer's well and truly over now, pal. The cold snap, it's starting.
Yeah, it's cold. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a stray from summer to winter person.
Yeah. Also, I suppose you're somebody who works in chilled environments.
Yes.
Habitually. Whereas, yes. Like, I think today was the first day where I had that old man thing of I got a chill into me in the morning and I didn't get it out for hours. I was sitting in work alone for the first 3 hours today and I'd blasted the heating and put a blanket around me like a cape. My co-worker's son said I look like a wizard, so I'll take that. He said, a wizard or Batman? I said, well, honestly, that's six of one, a half a dozen the other. I'll take both of those compliments. Thank you very much.
Ah, but which Batman?
This is true. This is very true. Very true. And consequently, I have brought out what was a recent gift to me that you may notice on this Zoom call. I am now the owner of one of these fucking snood things.
The snood dressing gown type thing.
The large kind of like hoodie / blanket thing. I don't know. It's early doors yet with this thing. I didn't think they were for me, but then like the last couple of nights it's actually been cold, but because I'm also an old man now, I'm stingy with putting on my heating. So it's like, it's cold enough that I can just layer up and I'll be fine. this is what's happening now. And I'll tell you, I think I might be a changed man now that I have one of these.
I'll tell you, you could be a conservative MP with that kind of rhetoric.
I actually look like when I stand up in it, because the whole gimmick is that they look like a fluffy hoodie that's about four sizes too big for you. So like when I'm walking around the house, I look like something out of fucking Sesame Street, coming down the stairs or whatever. But it's like I've been up here in the office the last couple of nights and I'm wearing it for like an hour and I have to pop the thing off because, oh, the tog in this thing is mighty. Like I work up quite a sweat just sitting here in this thing. So I'm pretty happy with it, I gotta say.
Well, I mean, whoever got you that lovely gift, they've done a good job.
That would be my lovely fiance, of course, who I think maybe got it more for herself, so I wouldn't be bitching about the cold.
I would imagine so. It was a gift for everybody.
Yeah, I so rarely feel the cold that when I do, I'm absolutely insufferable about it. So I'd say, yeah, she got it for everyone's benefit.
Well, considering I'm sat here in a hoodie and a pair of shorts. But I wear shorts all year round, so.
Yeah, I kind of only, it's funny like the how quick things change, because I was wearing shorts up until about 3 weeks ago. And now I'm like Captain Comfort over here. How have you been aside from that, pal?
I'm good. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show, but we got a recent promotion. So I am now office.
Oh my God. They gave you the book.
Oh, they gave me the book. Oh, you know, even worse, I have access to the books.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And as you can attest to, that's not a good thing.
So how long before you're replaced in an embezzling scandal? That's for the listeners to decide.
I mean, yeah.
The money was just resting in your account, of course.
Listen, they won't notice. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm now out of the cold and into the nice warm office where I can sit in a t-shirt all day. It's great.
Good stuff. Does it now you got to try and keep in touch with the common man now that you've been promoted away from that. You have to remember where you came from, Lee.
But you know what the best part is?
What's that?
I no longer have to work weekends.
Oh, yeah, I'm still on that working Saturdays train for now, but I think that will be changing in the near future. Fingers crossed. One other thing, well, actually two other things I wanted to mention before we went on is, I don't know who has seen the odd picture of me here and there on social media, but I'm going to provide a hair update, Lee, because I have an idea, right?
Okay.
So this hair that I've got, so you've known me for like 6 or 7 years now. And
easily.
Up until like relatively recently, I was always a shaved down, quite tight sort of guy. And one of my lockdown depression projects was to just grow out my hair. And it is now down past my shoulders. It is to the point of like having to require copious amounts of tying it up and things like that to just go about my day. But the whole kind of like it started out of the impracticality of getting your hair cut during lockdown because there was no barbers. And when you did go to a barber's, you had to wear a mask and it was all finicky and shit like that. So I was like, fuck it. And then I had this brainwave that I would grow it out to the length required to donate it to make wigs for the kids, the kids with cancer.
Mm.
This was my idea and I'd raise funds and things like that. Now, part of my problem was I said this out loud before I researched how long my hair would have to be. And I immediately partly regretted committing to this.
Just how long does your hair have to be for you to be able to donate it?
So the place I'm looking at, I think they're called the Rapunzel Foundation, need the hair to be over 12 inches
off
the top of my head. I am pleased to report, though, as of this week, I'm just over 11. So we're getting there. And I think when I hit that threshold, I'm going to let it grow to maybe 13-ish because I don't want it to... I don't want to get completely scalped if I can avoid it when I donate the hair. Like, I'd like it quite short, but not like, do you know, where I have to fucking shine myself up on the shine-o-ball-o when I'm done, leave a bit left. But I think what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to do like a fundraiser online for it as well as like, so I'm donating the hair, but I'm also raising a bit of money for charity.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm going to, what I'm doing is because I actually quite like my long hair. I quite enjoy having it long and I probably will grow it straight back, not this long. And I will get it cut to keep it even because the thing is I haven't touched it. So like the back is longer than the sides, you know what I mean? Because I was trying to get to that 12-inch threshold as quickly as possible.
I do not know what you mean, Dave, no.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes, this is true. Sorry, my follically challenged friend. No, so I think because I like it now, I was afraid that I'd kind of just not do it. So I think if I speak it out into the world...
You've now committed to the bit.
Yeah, I've now committed to the bit and people are going to get on me about it if I kind of go radio silent and don't talk about it. And that's kind of what I want. So that when it is long enough that I can do the fundraiser, you know, if some listeners felt like chipping in, that's cool. If not, at least they're keeping the pressure on that I can donate the hair. And I'm going to be hassling people in work about it anyway to donate to me. So there's that. And also, Lee, we're doing this podcast under a pall of sadness because one of the great workers of our day sadly passed away mere hours before this podcast was to begin. And I can see by your face you haven't heard the sad news, Lee.
No.
And that is that Angela Lansbury is no longer with us.
Oh, no.
Jessica Fletcher herself.
Oh, that's sad.
You know, RIP to a real one. So this one goes out to her. Were you a Murder, She Wrote guy growing up? It was like a staple of afternoon TV in Ireland.
I've seen so many episodes just without ever actually watching it. If that makes sense. It was just always, like you say, on afternoon television.
What about it? What's the Disney movie, Bedknobs and Broomsticks? Were you a Bedknobs and Broomsticks guy?
I wasn't. I probably saw it as a kid, but no memory of it. But yeah, no, look, obviously I'm aware of who Angela Lansbury is.
I remember one of the really early kind of like online forum film or TV theory things I ever read was the whole idea is like there's been so many murders in Cabot Cove. Do we think Jessica Fletcher was behind them?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Similar with John Nettles in Midsummer Murders. It's like a lot of murders happen in this small community and he's the common thread.
But what wasn't that the thing of the plot of Shaun of the Dead, basically?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I'm just going to see. I wonder, sometimes I do this when a celebrity dies and see if they have any ties with the world of wrestling just by Googling their name plus wrestling.
She had to have guest hosted Raw at some stage.
Well, there actually was. Hold on. I've just found a Cage Side Seats article. Apparently it was the lead-in in some territories for Raw.
Okay.
That's great stuff. So, truly, she's the opening act of Raw. She's the cold open for Raw.
Quite literally the cold.
Oh, dear. Oh, poor Angela. Poor Angela. Right, Lee, I suppose, just before we get into this episode of Thunder, we should go live now to the Days of Thunder hotline.
Thanks, Dave. You know, things have been really heating up here at the Days of Thunder hotline. Just this past week, we released Rehash of the Champions 4, the fourth installment in our chronological revisiting of every NWA and WCW era Clash of the Champions, which featured the main event of the Midnight Express taking on Ric Flair and Barry Windham. And next week, we will have Black and Golden Days Season 2, the second episode in our journey through every season of NXT as we work towards the TakeOver era, or as we like to refer to it, the Black and Golden Days. But, as you know, it's October, which means it's a very special time of the year here at Days of Thunder, as it's our Kedoween. And this month, we will have a very special free episode over at patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod, as we will be reviewing the classic Scream 2 starring the one and only David Arquette. But we feel that's just not enough this month, as you will also get a grab bag audio with Dave. You will get a lonely audio with Lee. Dave will be updating his sheet, tracking his match of the years. You will get show notes. You will get so much more only at patreon.com/WCW Thunderpod. So for this week, this has been me and Gene Malone with your Days of Thunder hotline update. And now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Thunder. Episode 59 from Orlando, Florida, 15th of April 1999, getting a 3.2 rating. Lee, going into this show, it's hard to believe nearly 60 episodes of Thunder under our belts so far.
Is it though?
how are you feeling?
I was going to save it later, but this may have been the Thunder that broke me.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Now,
it could also have been circumstance. So it's, you know, it has.
Yeah. Because, you know, here's the thing is that I came out with this Thunder pretty jazzed. Like, not like, oh, holy hell, what a killer show. But, like, I came out with going, I didn't hate that.
I quite enjoyed the episodes. But,
yeah.
I also fell asleep 4 times watching it.
You did, yes. Okay. So there's definitely one bit that broke us both. But, you know, we'll get into it. But I was kind of like, you know, that was a perfectly serviceable 2 hours of television. Mm-hmm. And there's probably people listening to this going, ah, fuck, they didn't hate it. The people that have come to see us suffer. But I was kind of, I was saying this in the Discord earlier today. We have a channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Join there today to join in with the chat with us. But I was saying that, like, whenever I find myself enjoying something on Thunder, I start to doubt myself now, because we've been doing this so long. Like, am I watching this and actually liking it? Or have I got such WCW brain worms from doing this for 3 years that I just can't discern quality anymore?
Well, the easiest way to answer that is, Dave, do you go on Twitter and defend Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo at all turns?
I absolutely do not. The other thing that maybe righted my sail on this one was realizing that when I got to a certain promo on this show, I was well aware of how bad it was. Okay. So my finely honed instincts are still in there somewhere. They're not quite, look, Lanza level finely honed instincts, but they're not completely broken either yet. So there is that.
Look, you're saying people are probably cursing that we didn't hate the show. There's a lot to dislike on the show.
This is quite a lot. But look, let's get into it.
It's not the worst episode, that's all I'll say. But
something I had, even though this is, I think, the third show with it, I had already forgotten that we were on the kind of the modern WCW swoosh logo. And it's weird. And I think I kind of alluded to this when we started the first show with this. Even though it's emblematic of the death rattle era of WCW, there's something cheerily familiar about it as well. Because obviously this is around the time that I start watching WCW. So that WCW logo ident and that kind of sound effect, there's something of the rose-tinted glasses about it for me. I don't know, because you're a guy that wasn't tuned into this era of WCW, do I sound like a completely crazy person? Or do you recognize that feeling in other things you watch?
I was watching... Like I said before, I wasn't every week or whatever, like later on into 99, but like this time I was definitely still watching, like when they changed the whole sets and stuff like that. I was still watching. So I definitely do have some nostalgia for this little era here.
I'll get less fond of the kind of the set and the logo nostalgia when we get to the next iteration of Nitro, which is just the kind of like metal awning and a white sheet, which I thought is just like the most fucking let's not jump the gun on that, but it's bullshit anyway. Tanay opens the show by describing Orlando as the home of every conceivable theme park known to man. There's something as well, you want to talk about a hit of nostalgia, Mike Tanay welcoming us to a television program based out of Orlando. Yeah.
Just feels right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, tnachad.com. So Tanay says that Larry has been going through kudos withdrawals for weeks, having not been in front of a live crowd, and he needed to acknowledge the fans. So Roman has been watching his Larry Zbysko tapes, as well he should. I thought, for stretches of the show, I didn't think Larry was horrible, but this opening bit from Larry, where he makes this incredibly pained reference to, obviously there must have been a tax hike under President Clinton recently, where he's talking about
it's tax day, isn't it? Yeah,
it's tax day, but DDP is a modern day Robin Hood. Also, I guess, are we just now all agreeing as an audience to completely memory hole that DDP was a heel until like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, he was a heel for about 2 weeks, and now he's back to just fighting the NWO again and being a good wife guy.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what? Like, I didn't want to turn heel in the first place, so I'm good with it. I just don't see why we needed to waste that time in the process. I feel like his title win would have been considerably hotter and
if he didn't
more enthusiastically received. Yeah, if you didn't muddy the waters. Or if there'd been any build really whatsoever. opening match here is Buff Bagwell versus El Vampiro. Larry here, absolutely playing a blinder as he talks about Tanay being very well informed, burying Tony Schiavone for being less knowledgeable than him, but also in the very same sentence pronounces Vampiro's name wrong.
Yeah, that's Larry.
Yeah, Larry tonight with the names. Oh, there's one I'll talk about later, but it's, yeah. Larry does a lot of guys on this show a disservice when he's being bad. Like, this wasn't his worst night we've covered him on. But, yeah, when he's bad, he's real bad.
Larry is a great example of don't have wrestlers as commentators because all they want to do is get themselves over.
Mm. Buff Bagwell is firmly back in full Buff Daddy mode. He's got the music now. He's got the hat.
I think we should have more top hats in wrestling.
We should, shouldn't we? But like regular sized top hats. I did hate when Tony Storm had the tiny top hat.
Oh yeah, no. They have to be yeah. Like either excessively large or just regular.
Yeah. Oh no, I would like an excessively large one.
Yeah, like just really long, and like.
Fucking... Yeah. Oh, like the proper like stovepipe Lincoln back. Stovepipe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I
think somebody could bring that back.
Okay. Give me two wrestlers that could pull that off.
Who could pull off a stovepipe? Huh?
I'll tell you, I know who I think possibly could.
Matt Classic.
Oh, yeah, but Matt Classic, that's a good one. The Butcher.
No, he'd have a regular. Sized one.
I just see with the chops, with the mutton chops, I'm thinking that would look good with a stovepipe.
Didn't Daniel Day-Lewis have a top hat, like just a regular sized top hat in There Will Be Blood?
Yeah, I think it was a regular sized top hat.
So I could see that working with the Butcher.
Yeah, going full Daniel Plainview.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't offhand. I had another one there.
I think Danhausen could show up just one week, just an excessively large hat.
I could see Danhausen like popping out of a human being sized stovepipe hat.
Mm.
Apparatus. Leave that one in the capable hands of the Thunder Buddies to let us know what current day wrestler could pull off a stovepipe hat.
Well, you do know that Abe Lincoln was a wrestler of his day.
Yeah.
A very successful one.
Great promo as well, got to be said. The Gettysburg promo popped a huge number. So Buff is all posing and taunting at the very start here. And I love Vampiro is just like, to say he was not impressed. Like Vampiro was slung, had his elbows resting on the top rope, facing away from as he's doing it. And then turns around and he's like, are you done? I did enjoy that.
Well, Vampiro was just pissed off that he wasn't wearing a loincloth.
Yeah. Tanay talks about Charles Robinson beefing with Randy Savage, which gave me, there was this feeling I had for a couple of seconds when they started talking about this. I had this pit in my stomach, yeah. Lee, and I couldn't quite place it. And then they said it.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you unaware, at the upcoming Slamboree 1999, we are going to have the classic ring encounter of referee Charles Robinson versus just recently introduced valet Gorgeous George.
Oh, no, you're not even describing it correctly. It's your woman versus mine.
Yes.
It's the way Randy Savage proposes the match to Ric Flair.
Yeah. Yeah. Tanay, with the most liberal use of the phrase, quite a matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Vampiro is controlling a lot of this match, which I really like. And it's another one of those times where you see him up against Buff and you're like, Vampiro was a huge human being.
He's a really big dude, yeah.
Like, he's not significant. Like, he's obviously not more jacked than Buff, but his frame is significantly larger than Buff, and he's not that much taller than him, but he feels much bigger.
I think people do forget just how big of a human he actually is. It's the whole Billy Gunn effect.
Yeah.
People don't realize
he's in the land of the giants.
How big Billy Gunn is until he's, you know, not surrounded by huge people.
And because obviously now, like, you know, he's 20 some years older and he's had like significant health issues and things like that. Like, he does appear smaller and he's more hunched and stuff like that now. But this is him at 31 years old and he's fucking massive.
Watching this match reminded me of why I was so drawn to Vampiro when he first came into the company. He's such a breath of fresh air.
He's just so different from everything else. And I think, I don't want to give 1999 WCW too much credit, but I feel like early on they knew he was something different, because he's never a guy, like, he's not like exactly on a winning streak here, but I think every time we've seen him, even if he's losing, they're doing all they can to get him over as like a serious threat. Like, he felt like a serious threat to Buff here, who really should be breezing through newer dudes at this point, because he's, you know, just broken off from the NWO, going for this like babyface run, etc., etc. But yeah, Vampiro looks incredibly credible here. And Buff is back on top in the match. He attempts a 10 punch. He gets dropped on the turnbuckle. And then, yeah, it's like at the 10th punch, he gets dropped on the turnbuckle. And then it's back to Vampiro on top. He's getting cut off over and over again as he makes comebacks. He reverses a suplex attempt, slingshot, power slam, lariat. He goes off the top. Yeah, this is really cool. He goes off the top for like a double axe handle or something and lands perfectly into an atomic drop from Vamp. I like that. Yeah. Vampiro goes for a top rope Frankensteiner, but Buff holds on, blockbuster, and a win. Like I said, Lee, I thought Vampiro looked really good here.
I actually thought the two of them looked well. I love the blockbuster as a finish.
It's a great finish, yeah.
Again, just totally different to anyone else in the company. And just so unique for a guy the size of Buff to be doing a move like that.
Yeah. It's so seldom post neck injury that we get a really solid Buff singles match. But it's nothing to go out of your way to watch on VOD, but it did the business. I enjoyed it. Next up, something that didn't do the business, Wrath versus Jerry Flynn. Most impressive thing in this match, Lee, Jerry Flynn's rug, his impressive jungle of body hair.
He just doesn't care anymore, Dave.
No, it's full like Tom Selleck hairy chest. Mm-hmm. Impressive. Jerry doesn't last long in this match. He has a little flurry of offense, but then Wrath hits him with a huge flying tackle, rolls him out of the ring, whips him into the rail, breaks the count. Tanay has an injury update on Hogan during this. He's going to have surgery next week on an MCL injury with Dr. Andrews. Flynn musters a clothesline that floors Wrath on the outside, gets whipped into the rail, blocks a punch. They get back in the ring, and Wrath goes to do a clothesline off the top rope, Lee. And this is where it all falls apart.
Yeah, he legit hurts his knee or his ankle.
He ruptured his ACL.
Is that what that was, yeah?
He is out for 1 year after this match.
What, do you hear he chronic?
He doesn't return until Chronic in 2000. It's to the month. He returns in April 2000.
At least I'll have something to look for. Oh, yeah, because it's the reboot. That's right.
Yeah. So, how you do your ACL this badly on a diving clothesline off the top, where like he was landing on his front, not on his, like, he wasn't landing in a standing position off it.
Big dude does a natural thing, hurts himself.
It's just one of those crazy, you know, wrestlers do the scariest things in the world and, mm-hmm. and walk away fine, and then they do something simple and their leg falls off.
And it's a move we've seen him do plenty of times, is that flying clothesline.
Yeah.
But I love that, in spite of knowing that he's badly injured, he just couldn't put Jerry Flynn over.
Yeah, I know. Tanay wonders, yeah, like such bad timing for Tanay to do his little talking point he's done before about wondering why the championship committee won't give Wrath a shot. Well, Tanay, you don't have to worry about that anymore, because this is the last time that he'll go by Wrath on this show.
Oh yeah, it's the end of Wrath.
Yeah, it is. As they brawl into the aisle, the ref throws the match out. This was clearly an audible mm-hmm. because he could not put any weight on his leg.
He was struggling badly.
They are trying to do brawling outside. He is limping so badly trying to do it. I think all he could do was drag the leg.
I think Jerry Flynn just at once just walks away from him, just like, dude, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Wrath is trying to keep going, and they're like very gingerly brawling up the ramp. But then Jerry is just finally like, oh, fuck it. Although I will say at one point, Jerry is trying to like, they're trying to make turn the injury into a work, and he laces a couple of kicks into the actual leg he's after blowing out, and I was like, Jerry,
come on,
Jerry, come on.
We should say it's also during this match, or during the entrances possibly, that we find out that at Slamboree it's DDP versus Kevin Nash for the World Heavyweight title.
That's a big one, quite literally.
It's the future insiders gone one on one.
So speaking of blown out knees, it's interesting because they make a point a couple of times in the show about how many people are on the shelf at the moment, and I suppose we hadn't had time to reflect on that. Like, Hogan is out for a couple months. I think he's out till the end of the summer. Lex has been out since January.
It's not till the end of the summer, is it?
And I think it's till July.
Well, I thought the Hulk. When's the Hulk Hogan come back? Here. It is. I thought it was the end of May.
He may not wrestle then, though. He may be back on TV.
I think he comes back and does like the Hulk Hogan return.
Because I was looking at this the other day, because I was just like, definitely not all these NWO people they're talking about are actually injured. And it's true, because in that lump of names from the NWO that Tanay keeps talking about are injured, he lists Scott Steiner. Scott Steiner wrestled on the Nitro that just happened, and he's on Nitro the following week.
Definitely not injured.
Yeah.
Because
we are officially, by the way, according to Cage Match, by the next time he wrestles, actually no, we already are. We are already in the last 100 matches of Hulk Hogan's career.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, he's gone till July.
Okay, is it July? Jesus.
He was in the title match that DDP won, and then he's gone until he beat Savage on Nitro for the belt.
In his comeback.
Yeah, it must be in Jacksonville.
Holy fuck.
Nitro 199.
I thought he came back for a tag match, and that's the return of Hulk Hogan.
Are you thinking of it? Because he does a couple returns.
Possibly.
Like, he returns a couple of times over between now and the end of his stint. Yeah, it doesn't really bear thinking about. Anyway. Yeah, I think, yeah, but Scott isn't injured. Lex Luger is.
Oh, is he?
Lex Luger has already been out for a while, but this is the first time anyone acknowledged it. It's like he's on TV, but
yeah,
he's
been physical.
He doesn't have a match again for a little while after this, so he's out with something.
Drugs.
And then I can't remember. Oh, Scott Hall obviously is gone. But yeah, they just talk about like the ranks of the NWO, the non geek division, are
Tim.
Really struggling. What have we got up next here? Oh god, out of the frying pan into the fire. Meng versus Horace Hogan.
Yep.
One bonus, we were firmly in Big Pants Meng era.
What I will say is, this is the type of match that you just absolutely adore. It's a punch kick special.
Yeah, you know how much I love it. Now, I unironically love the greatest no bump match of all time, that is Meng versus Giant from Nitro that time. But this was dog shit terrible.
Yeah, I mean, Horace going blow for blow with Meng is certainly a choice.
Larry, by the way, two matches on from when he first talked about it, is still moaning about Charles Robinson. Tanay reminds us that Stevie Ray is now the king of the geeks because he run that power of the NWO Black and White Battle Royal 2 weeks ago. All the while they're talking about anything but the match, Meng is just beating Horace pillar to post here, and rightfully so. Outside the ring, Horace gets up ahead of steam, but he ends up eating the rail. He tries to match Meng for strikes, which is just a poor idea. And Meng is just doing Meng things, by which I mean no selling and just beating the shit out of him, stiffing him left, right, and center. Inside the ring, Meng hits a power slam, stomps and chokes on the ground. Then we hit what I think might be the new worst suicide dive of all time from Horace here at one point. Horace hits a suplex, which he thinks is going to be enough to put away the man who doesn't sell anything. Rope break. Meng hits one of the worst roll-ups I may have ever seen for a two count. Corner clothesline, running clothesline, and my jaw dropped as Horace Hogan was permitted to do the family leg drop. And also Meng kicked out at two.
You say permitted.
Yeah. Well, I guess Hogan wasn't there, yeah. So, you know, fill your boots, mate. But do you know what? For all the dog shit this was, I kind of love the finish.
The sunset flip into the Tongan deck rip.
Yeah, so like Horace attempts a sunset flip and Meng stands up straight, blocks it, and Horace is still trying with all his might to pull Meng over into the sunset flip and he won't give up. And Meng is posing there for a second and it's like everyone in the crowd knows what's going to happen.
The wavy arms, yeah.
Yeah, and he holds it and then boom, with the Tongan death grip, and Horace taps out. Look, it was a terrible match, but I did pop for that finish. Can I talk about the real controversy of this match, Lee?
Of course, yeah.
What in the hell was that triple square patty Wendy's hamburger that they showed during the replay?
Okay, I didn't take note of it. I did take note of it when I was watching.
Yes.
I don't get what these Wendy burgers are. It's like a triple stack or something they call it, don't they?
Is it? Are they? Is the square patty a standard at Wendy's?
I think that's a Wendy's thing, yeah.
Okay, I have never been to Wendy's. So this was like some sort of triple stack. It was part of the Wendy's classic slam of the show. And it wasn't even a slam. It was a Tongan death grip of the show. But yeah, I was...
appalled.
I was equal parts appalled and besotted by this burger. It's like, I'm horrified that it exists, but would I want to try one? Impossible.
I don't like the idea of the burger being outside the bun. The whole point of the bun is to contain the contents.
This is true. But I do... I said this is probably the worst of both worlds, because I was about to say, like, I prefer a burger that goes wider than higher, because I hate the burgers where you have to, like, nearly dislocate your jaw to try and get a bite out of it. But this is kind of both, because it's three patties and it's sticking out of the bun. Yeah. So, like, whether you hate high burgers or wide burgers, you're having a fucking shit time.
Like, by the time you get into the bun, like, it's just, you will have eaten over, like, half of it.
And even though I say I'm a little bit besotted and might try this triple-decker thing, we've had the triple Whopper here for many years in Burger King's in Ireland, and I will not partake. And that's not just because of my spicy Burger King takes from behind the paywall last week.
As we learned last week, not a fan of the Burger King.
No, it's not a fan. It's just I've never had one where I've gone, that was a fucking great Burger King.
Again, I'm not gonna touch your Burger King opinions here.
Yeah, you don't want to be tired. Yeah. Now that we're out from behind the paywall, I shouldn't be sharing this spice, because I was getting enough shit for it behind the paywall at alargemanappears.com. Which, by the way, since our last show on the free feed, we now own alargemanappears.com. It directs you to our Patreon page, which I couldn't be prouder and also more ashamed of that we own that now.
Just think of how many people are going to Google alargemanappears.com.
I know. I was surprised it wasn't taken.
Yes, that's right, my friends. It's Dave coming to you from the edit bay in the middle of the night, which means it must be time to talk about HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Now you're saying to me, Dave, I've heard you say this before. Why are you reminding us about the great offers at HelloFresh yet again? Well, I say this to you, my friend. The days are getting shorter. The nights are getting longer. You're coming home from work. It's already dark. The kids are gone back to school. They're an absolute nightmare when they come home. You're getting tired. The last thing you want is to think, oh, I have to go out to the store. I have to get ingredients. I have to put the dinner together. It's just going to take a couple of hours. We all get a bit lazy at this time of year. It's perfectly understandable. You're human. I'm human. But you know what? Our friends at HelloFresh are here to make things just that bit easier for you. Gear up for the busy fall season with 55 plus weekly options and take the stress out of meal planning and prepping. From family friendly, fit and wholesome, and even veggie, HelloFresh has tasty and nutritious meals sure to please everyone. Getting back into the fall season can be busy, but weeknights can be made so much easier with foolproof, step-by-step recipes, ready in around 30 minutes or less. I don't know about you guys, but I get home at about, 9 p.m. in the evening, and if I had my pre-portioned ingredients ready to go for dinner, my God, that just makes things a little bit easier, you know, especially when I've got Stagger Lee Malone waiting for me to get on the blower to him to record another episode of his podcast. Days of Thunder. How can you avail of this offer? Well, my friends, I shall tell you. You go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16, and when you're there, use the code VOW16. That's going to get you 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. I'll say that one more time. It's HelloFresh.com/VOW16, code VOW16 while you're there for 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. It's really too good to let that opportunity pass you by. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Back to the show.
So, our next segment here has Flair and Arn with their butler, Charles Robinson. So, we've just completely abandoned any pretense towards subtlety in this angle.
Yes.
Because there had been a whole... They had been riding the line, so to speak, of... Okay, we don't know for sure he's being favourable towards Flair, but it sure seems like it. And, you know, he's not saying anything about it, but we know he's a huge Flair fan and his license plates and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's literally waiting on Flair and Arn hand and feet.
Yeah, he's literally just pouring their drinks.
Yeah,
so we've gone from...
And taking his calls, in fairness.
Yeah, we've gone from... Ric Flair abusing his power as world heavyweight champion to Ric Flair is an actual insane madman who was in control of the company.
Yeah. A couple of funny moments in here. So a woman named Georgia from Turner is in to get Flair to just sign a bunch of contracts. And this woman, who is clearly not a plant, like she's clearly just a normal off, might legitimately have been someone from Turner that was there to do some paperwork that day and they just hauled her on screen. Like she was so out of her depth, and Flair is like trying to crack on to her in the middle of it. And she is like not somebody who is ready to be on camera and do some ad-libbing with Nate. She's just like not giving him anything whatsoever. So Flair then demands from Charles Robinson the incredibly difficult task of bringing him one postage stamp by next week.
Yeah, he doesn't want to sign things anymore. He just wants to stamp things.
Yeah. Arn goes crazy at Flair because Flair isn't reading the contract. And he's like, this has gotten us in trouble before, like you rushing into things and things like that. You need to read the contract. And... he was just like, what? This is in, I think, I can't believe Arn and Flair didn't both crack at Flair saying the wrong thing here, where he goes, why should I? I'm the president of the United States. Pause. The WCW.
Well, I think that was supposed to be there because that's the whole thing of he genuinely is a insane person who thinks he's in control of the whole country.
Him and Arn's back and forth in this segment was the new most Trailer Park Boys segment in WCW history, I think. It just had that energy of Ricky and Julian, I feel.
I loved Arn's reaction of trying to look through the paperwork as Flair is signing it.
Tried desperately to catch up and make sure he hasn't like signed away a kidney.
What do you think of who's a better president? Is it Ric Flair in WCW, or is it Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Simpsons movie?
Oh, that's a tough call. I mean, I'm going to have to go with Arnie because I've still only watched the Simpsons movie once or twice, but I've had to endure President Flair for fucking months of podcasting here.
Fair.
Yeah. What do we got up next here? We've got Mikey Whipwreck versus Disco Inferno. Tanae describes Disco as musically challenged. And then Larry, in the start of, I think, dedicated character assassination of Mikey Whipwreck, starts this segment by describing him as dressing like his Polish aunts, and then proceeds to repeatedly, over the course of not a long match, forget Mikey's name.
Well, I mean, Mikey came from the ECW, and obviously our Larry does not respect anyone that came from the ECW.
In a moment of these guys have taken their eyes off the ball, they're talking about how Disco isn't dancing and how focused he is on beating his opponent since he joined the NWO.
As he
is dancing at that, like at that exact moment as they're saying it, but they're like, fuck it, this is our talking point, we're just going to keep saying it.
Well, is Disco still in the NWO because he no longer has the NWO sting on his music or is wearing an NWO shirt?
This is true.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
We are back from the break, and Mikey has an opportunity to get some damage in. He does what is a very uncomfortable-looking Russian leg sweep that smacks both their heads into the railing.
Didn't like that at all.
Throws him back into the ring. Slingshot Snapmare was like a good idea that looked horrible in execution. He then does kind of redeems it a little because Disco's head is hanging out kind of through the ropes onto the apron, and he does a slingshot leg drop onto the apron, which looks good. It's a really sloppy match, Lee, but one thing I will say, and you know I hate giving him credit, Disco does have legitimate heel heat at this point.
Mm-hmm. He does. For all his faults, the WCW fans were never... he was never not interesting to the people that were there. Like, he always got a reaction one way or another. It's not a pairing I would ever have thought to put together, Disco and Mikey. I just don't think it would work, and obviously it didn't. But look, Disco needed a win, so
in a moment that I think was trying to personally test me, Disco does a very obnoxious disco dance that makes me hate him, followed by a gorgeous swinging neckbreaker. And you know how much I love my swinging neckbreakers, friend. Disco is kind of playing with his food here. Instead of pinning him, he's just taunting. And I kind of thought, oh, are they setting it up so that Mikey, he's getting too cocky and this teaches him the lesson that he really does need to focus on his opponents. Tanay mentions in something that I really would have liked to have seen a replay of, that Kimberly took Scott Steiner's head off with a chair on Monday. And it also reminds me that we haven't seen one replay of what sounds like a very eventful Nitro on this show. And here's something, Lee. We would get one replay later on in the show, right? It feels so weird to demand more replays. But I do think there is a balance. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Like, they've definitely overdone it on some shows where we're basically, why didn't we just watch Nitro? But this is like, it's feast or famine. And this is one of those weeks where like they constantly refer to what sounds like cool stuff that happened in Nitro, but they won't fucking show you.
It's that whole thing of because there was no real boss, there was nobody to like keep things consistent. And again, it's also the thing of, they just wanted people to watch on a Monday. And if that means we don't show you what happened on Thursday, well, you'll just have to watch on Monday.
Yeah. It was just like very disappointing when that kind of penny dropped in my head. Mikey hits a neckbreaker of his own. That gets a near fall. Disco, what did you think of this finish, Lee? So Disco gets ducks a clothesline. Grabs Mikey in a scorpion death drop position and then twists out of that into a last dance.
Ada.
Yeah, it feels like he's trying to do the DDP thing.
Yeah, he sees that the diamond cutter arrow nowhere is getting over, or has gotten over, and he's trying to do his own version of that, and it's just clunky. It just doesn't work with the stunner. The stunner is the boot.
Yeah,
you have just boot stunner. That's what works.
Yeah. Yeah, don't. When something is already that good, like there's no need to fuck with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I didn't care for it. The other thing, so Disco is doing this thing now when he's doing his disco dances that he's doing like very aggressive kind of stomps.
Yeah.
As he's doing it, and I was kind of like, it was very much like Job, Lindsay, and George Sr. doing the chicken dance. I felt like Michael was like, has this man ever seen disco dancing? It was not characterized by its like aggressive
stomping
around. Fucking weird as shit. Anyway. Mean Gene is here with the geeks, Stevie, Vincent, Adams, and Horace. I will say this, now that he is the undisputed leader, or so we think, of NWO Black and White, Stevie Ray, you know, if you were to choose one out of these, Stevie Ray is the one who looks a cut above, both like as more physically imposing than the rest of them, and in terms of, you know, didn't lick it off the side of the road with that brother of his gear is mm-hmm. just on a different level from the other guys.
Yeah.
So you can't kind of, you can't criticize him for that.
You can't criticize him for that. But I can criticize him for is the fact that four times I fell asleep watching this promo. Four separate
Lee,
times.
As soon as you said that, I said, you know what? I'm not even going to go to my notes. I'm going to sit back and much like, as if this was a Blitzkrieg match, I am going to hand over to you to recount the promo, but also your battle with the Sandman, not Hack, as you tried to watch this promo.
Yeah, so like, normally I watch the shows a day or two before we record. So I was ahead of myself 2 days in advance. We've been kind of having some sleepless nights recently with the baby having their teething issues. So I said, oh, look, I'll get ahead of things, have the show watched so that if we can record at the last minute some night, we can get the show done and all good. No, I sat down on Sunday evening to watch the show. I had literally just finished. I think I was eating a sandwich or something. I was sat straight up. Wasn't lying down. Wasn't like in a comfortable position. I was sat on the corner of the sofa, just sitting up. Stevie Ray came on the screen, start talking about how the NWO were no Keystone Cops, and I fell asleep.
Which is like, it was that your body had such a violent reaction to this lie that it just turned off the lights.
So I fell asleep. I proceeded to wake up a bit stunned and unaware of where I was. Realised I fell asleep sitting up. So I said, no, it's still relatively early in the night. It was before 1 o'clock in the morning. I was like, right, I'll go back. There's only half an hour of the show left. I'll go back and watch it. So I went back, restarted the segment again. They're all in the ring. Stevie Ray starts talking about how the NWO are here to police the wrestling industry like they were supposed to. And I fell asleep. It was at that point when I woke up again an hour later that I decided to call it a night.
It's another episode of The Simpsons with the Hell Satans, where Homer like keeps walking into the bar to give them a piece of his mind, and then like just scene jumps and he's just unconscious outside the bar again.
That was me in this promo, yeah. So, it was the next night then that that night that I went to bed, I proceeded to get all of 40 minutes sleep. And I informed Dave that I still hadn't watched the show because I'd been up all night.
So unprofessional.
Oh, it's incredible that my child would keep me awake.
Yeah.
So I went to work, did a day's work, came home, decided, Grant, I've got 30 minutes of the show to watch. I'll go from the promo, and it won't take long. So sat down. Well, I should say, I had the baby. Got her to sleep about 9:30. So it was like, right, Grant, plenty of time. It's still early in the night. I'll get the show watched. I'll go to bed early. Sat down. Everyone else was in bed at this point. Connor was in bed. Jen was in bed. Grant, I've got 30 minutes. If it takes me 40 minutes to watch the show, that's fine. Take a few notes. Start the segment. Stevie's talking about there are no Keystone Cops. They're here to police the NWO. Hogan's not got it anymore because he's got a bum knee. And I fell asleep.
It's got to be said as well, like, you kind of alluded to it there. These shows, when you look at them on the network or whatever, are like an hour 26, mm-hmm. an hour 30. But it takes us, falling asleep, borderline narcolepsy aside, it takes us a good, 2.5 hours to watch them because we pause so frequently for notes.
Because mm-hmm. you got to take notes of what people are saying and doing and stuff you notice in the background. So I fell asleep again. Literally just, I think it was like the next line in the promo. So I woke up. I can't even remember what time of the night it was. I was like, fuck, it happened again. So I went, turned on the heating in the house. It was cold. It was the middle of the night. Proceeded to go back again to the promo. And I don't even think I got to the point where they start talking. And I was back asleep on the couch. And I then proceeded to watch the last 35 minutes of the show. About 2 hours before we started recording here today. And let me tell you. For all the effort I put in for this fucking promo. It was not worth it. I should have just skipped the segment.
Yeah. Were you like when you went to it a fifth time, were you afraid that it was just going to happen again?
Yes. 100%.
Were you starting to get genuinely afraid that there was something about this promo?
I thought
that was triggering.
It was the fucking what's the words in Captain America, the Winter Soldier? Like, just there's this series of words that are just triggering me to fall asleep.
So you're activated like the Manchurian Candidate over there.
They want us to take the black and white seriously, and that's just too much for my brain to...
Nope, sorry. Shut down. I mean, I gotta say I respect it.
Listen, of all the things to break me, I did not expect it to be a Stevie Ray promo.
Yeah. God damn.
But, when I did get through it eventually, I realised that this is one of two incredibly significant moments in the history of our podcast.
Oh?
I don't know if you know this. Okay. Or if you noticed this during the promo. But we have the first ever reference to a fruit booty.
Ah, yes, I did notice that. And if you don't like that phrase, I would not recommend watching much of Stevie Ray for the next 2 years.
I believe Stevie Ray describes DDP as a low-down, modern-day beatnik fruit booty.
Yes, he does indeed.
And he then proceeds to threaten to pimp slap two people tonight if he brings Kimberly to the ring.
he makes reference to something else here, Lee, that I wanted to bring up. They're talking about their boy, Scott Norton. He would be here tonight, but he's currently on his way over to beat up 15 Japanese guys or something and bring back the IWGP heavyweight title. Lee?
Was Scott Norton going to be in the G1? Is that what he was doing?
No, Lee. Lee, he would not go to Japan for another 2 months after this. He was on Nitro next week.
Oh, okay.
So, but apparently he was in Japan beating up 15 men, winning the title, and then coming back this week.
So did somebody just tell Stevie a lie and just say, Norton's in Japan, he couldn't be here tonight?
Or he got hit on the head and thought it was like 6 or 8 months ago, whenever it was, that he actually was IWGP heavyweight champion in WCW.
Maybe Stevie Ray had been going around telling people that he beat the IWGP champion in a battle royal.
Also, I gotta say, in a move that made me laugh quite a bit, he reminded everybody that he, you know, after threatening DDP and threatening Kimberly, that he has backup in the form of those guys around him. And I was like, backup? For Kimberly?
I think he calls Bryan Adams the Thumper.
He does.
He calls Horace the H-Bomb.
Yeah, he does. He sure does.
And then just refers to Vincent as Vincent.
Yeah, well.
I mean,
he doesn't bring much else to the table. Not, he certainly is Vincent.
They're not all winners.
No. Not in this group, that's for sure. But yeah, I just love that, you know, he's just like, I want everybody to know that I've got these three guys to help me in case this guy's wife decides to rough me up.
Well, he
very funny.
He did
indeed.
See that she decapitated Scott Steiner on Nitro. So,
next up, we have a tag team match featuring Lee's favorite tag team and also Perry Saturn and Raven. It's Perry Saturn and Raven versus Disorderly Conduct. That's right, Mean Mike and Tough Tom, aka Salty Sally, are back.
I actually, Connor watched this part of the show with me. He watched like the last couple of segments. And when they came out, I said, do you know who they are? And he's like, no. I said, that's a tag team called Disorderly Conduct. Do you know their names? He's no, I never heard of them. I was like, I said, right, well, one is named Mean Mike. And he proceeded to give me the most withering look. And I said, no, legitimately, Mean Mike and his tag team partner is Tough Tom. And he goes, is this a squash match? I said, no, but it should be, son.
Yeah. I'm glad that he's aware of where their place should be without ever having seen them. And that's before you even got into how Tough Tom spells tough.
Yeah, I mean, wait till he gets into the lore of High Voltage.
Oh my god. When he hears about Robbie Royd.
Yeah.
Raven's on the mic. He says, I don't have much to say. What about him? What about Raven? Saturn says, indubitably. Which did get a laugh out of me, I gotta say.
I love that whole sentence. Raven's like, or the whole problem with Raven's like, I haven't had much to say the past couple of weeks. And I don't really have much to say right now. Other than, what about me? What about Raven? And he goes, what's he call it? Is it?
My colleague.
My colleague here may have stuff to say. Do you have anything to say? He's like, indubitably. Yeah. I wish to accessorize my new attire with the World Tag Team titles.
Yeah, so they just
to answer our question from earlier on, Perry Saturn could bring back Top Hat.
Yes, oh, he definitely could. Yeah, they were just having some fun here, the boys, and you know, I can't blame them too much for that because I had fun watching them.
We should say Raven, who is now a Impact Hall of Famer.
Yes, that
did
is
did you see
true.
That great video package and, they did?
No, I didn't. Are you being sarcastic?
No, they really did a good video package for him on Impact.
I saw that he hit one last even flow on Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah, he turned on him one last time just because.
Yeah, that's, do you know what? Perfect.
Bravo. Yeah, bravo.
Absolutely. If that is the last thing we see Raven do in professional wrestling, turn on Tommy Dreamer. It's just perfect. Fair play to them for that. I must look up that video package. Can I ask you a question, Lee?
Of course.
Did these big Egypts, meaning disorderly conduct, always have such divorced facial hair?
No, I don't think so. Possibly.
Like, it was proper, they turned the winds against us. Facial hair, like...
Do you think these two...
It's proper, you should be lucky to get weekend visitation hair.
Come on, we go to McDonald's, kids, kind of thing, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think these two started out as fresh-faced, full of hope on Saturday nights in, like, 1995?
I don't know. I can't imagine these men looking any younger than about 45.
That's a good point. Do you know what? I'm gonna put it out now. I want Aaron to, our friend Aaron Quinn, to tell us when the first appearance of disorderly conduct was on WCW television.
Because Lord knows you don't want that in your cage match search history. So I think it's a solid minute into this match before Tanae is like, oh yeah, this is disorderly conduct, which just goes to show you where they are in the totem pole at the moment.
Yeah, but Tanae does Saturday night, so he's used to seeing them.
Yeah, yeah. Double team and a very nonchalant cover from Perry Saturn. I really love, it's such a jobber thing that their tights say mean and tough. So, I suppose, like, it's either that or they say Tom and Mike.
Well, see, they say mean and tough because they might go to another territory and change their name.
Yeah, but I just can't get over the T-U-F-F. It's just...
Too tough.
It's the like most fucking...
Too tough Tony. That was the most popular one. In the indies in the late 90s, Too Tough Tony. Every time you'd start the EWR and, you know, you'd look for new recruits, you'd always see Too Tough Tony at the top.
Today he gets into his rock and roll theorizing here as he says that he could understand people being behind Raven in Tacoma the other week because, you know, grunge music. And he said, but you know what? We're here in Tacoma this week and the people are really starting to love Raven. They love him here as well. This match has negative heat, Lee, because there is not one person in this building, even if the tough and mean families are in attendance, believing for one second that disorderly conduct are going to win this.
Do you think their kids went to school and you know like kids do the whole, my dad could beat up your dad.
Yeah. My dad's real tough. T-U-F-F.
Do you think their kids went to school and like, yeah, your dad probably could beat up my dad.
Yeah, tiny tough Tim is just... Oh, God. I think you just say, oh, my dad, like what's a less embarrassing job than being disorderly conduct?
I don't know.
My dad's a jizz mopper at a porno booth. Is that less embarrassing?
I mean...
much of a muchness.
It's probably a more respected industry.
I guess there's more consistent payoffs.
More clean finishes.
More finishes, for sure.
What do you think of dusty finishes in that industry?
just a fucking like cloud and some cobwebs come out.
Big Pop has a totally different meaning as well.
Oh, fucking talk about high spots, eh?
So Raven and Saturn win.
Yeah, Raven gets in, clears house, brings in Saturn brings in the chair, drop toe hold, pin broken up by me and Mike. Saturn does the 10 punches under the skirt. Lads attempt a double whip, which is nearly reversed on them, and then they hit a T-bone and an even flow, and that's all she wrote. This went on as your son cut right to the core of much longer than it should have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at least our boys, Raven and Perrence, are heading in the right direction. Yeah. So, fair play. Finally, Lee, we get a flashback to something that happened before, and it's the horsemen jumping Ray and Kidman wasn't there. Saturn and Raven had to make the save. So they're teasing dissension amongst the tag team champions.
Which is funny when you consider the only team that will last beyond the summer is Ray and Kidman.
Yeah. Mm. Next up, WCW Cruiserweight title match, Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Juventud Guerrera. Let's go. Finally, it's just like, this is one where you see that on the card and you're like, okay, we're going to have something good. And it was.
Speaking of something good, I was watching this match and I had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dominic Mysterio has turned heel and gone all broody and mysterious.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was thinking for some real heat.
Okay.
Dominic needs to start wearing some FUBU and oversized basketball shirts and dressing like his dad in this era.
Okay. That would, I think that would be intensely disliked.
Yeah.
And also, what I would also enjoy is the overwhelming majority of current day WWE fans who would have absolutely no fucking idea what he was doing.
Oh no, they wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
But I'd love it.
I did appreciate it. You see the tweet that was going out today that I really loved, because after inexplicably being tricked into re-signing the Good Brothers this week, there's talk that WWE are on the cusp of signing Matt Taven.
Get the fuck out of here.
There was a great tweet about how it's going to be so funny watching WWE fans have to pretend that Matt Taven's good.
Well, do you know what? Matt Taven would be, he'd be the only person on that roster to fucking sell out Madison Square Garden, so.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say that, like, look, I'm not as low on him as some other people. I think he's a perfectly fine tag guy, but I don't think his tag partner's going back with him.
No.
Not after how that last thing went. Although, do you know what? Somebody dug up a Carl Anderson tweet from about 18 months ago where he was like, absolutely fucking never will I go back there. And was it? Yeah, oh, he's deleted it now, yeah. Unless I need a second pool. Okay, I guess he did need it.
The man that was fucking texting his wife saying, tell the kids I love them, is now going back to fucking Saudi Arabia in 2 weeks, like.
Holy fuck. Holy fuck.
No respect.
So this match, just this match being on the card, it's over as hell now at this point, because the bell rings and before these guys even lock up, there's a reaction from the crowd. They know they're going to see some shit. We firmly as well, we are in prime the juice territory now. He is firmly a heel.
Yes, he is.
Again, Tanay is trying to sell us a bill of goods about how all the NWO was injured. Again, look, I don't have a huge interest in recounting move for move this match, because I mean this in a flattering way that we've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, if you see the Ray Hoovy match and you've heard us review the Ray Hoovy match before, you kind of know what you're in for. I think it's a more... The only dynamic I will say is that it's more now... We've had Hoovy doing, like, subtle heel before with Ray, but this is firm now. I am the heel.
I'm an American US wrestling heel, Hoovy.
Yeah. But the action is still fast. Mm-hmm. The impact is still good.
This match is also the second significant moment in the history of our show.
Okay. I think I know what it might be.
What do you think it might be?
Is it the first instance of the Juice's elbow? It is. Yeah. So just in case him referring to himself as the Juice, you weren't sure who he was trying to rip off, he makes it very easy for you to figure out.
See, people think this was all Vince Russo. This is a good, 4 months before Vince Russo even comes in.
This garbage truck was on fire already. Now, he arrived with just a couple of cans of petrol. But yeah, it wasn't 100% him.
Out like years later that this was all a big rib by like Conan and a few others in the back to basically tell Hoovy to just start mimicking The Rock?
That would not be a surprise to me. I could absolutely see
that. I'd have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure that was the story that they all just kind of basically egged Hoovy on to start doing his own version of The Rock.
Yeah, and I could also see WCW not having remotely enough interest in quality control to stop a rib like that making it to the air. There's a couple of good spots in here. There's a bit where Hoovy tries to do like a corner rebound and he gets caught by the legs and just planted really hard on his face. Mm-hmm. Ray does a Bronco Buster, but he taunts too long after it. He nearly gets powerbombed, but reverses into a roll-up. Ray does one of the quicker tilt-a-whirl backbreakers you're ever likely to see in the wild. I will say about the Hoovy elbow, which happens around this point in the match, Lee, that much as I groaned and rolled my eyes, people fucking hated him for it.
They did.
People got real fucking mad. So they do kind of like a string of reversals and it culminates in a really hard looking Hoovy driver, but he can't make the cover. Sets up the 450. Ray is obviously one of the best of all time, but he is one of the best of all time at the last ditch lunge to knock somebody off the top. That was really, really impressive, I have to say. Every time I think he's not going to make it this time, and he did it. So fair fucking play to him. Crotches him at the, like, literally the last possible second. Ray hits, speaking of quick moves, a lightning quick snap hurricane rana off the top rope for the
really
win.
Seen running up the top rope rana from Ray. Really good match.
It's probably not their
nowhere in their, like, not even their top 50 matches, but still, in comparison to everything else that's on the show, it's just a good solid match.
Yes, 100%. We are now back to Flair and Charles Robinson backstage, and Lee nearly just like melted into his couch at the thought of having to talk about this again. This is going to be maybe one of the most specific comparisons of all time. But Charles Robinson in this segment, looking at Ric Flair with the admiration / horniness that, like, I have not seen a bigger pair of lustful eyes in professional wrestling since, I believe, Great American Bash 2007, I think it was, where there is a backstage skit with the Hardy Boys. By any chance ringing a bell?
No, it was 2007, the one with all the elevated liver enzymes.
It could have been. I want to say 2007. I might not have the year right. But there's a backstage segment where the Hardy Boys are talking and all of a sudden they look off screen and it cuts to Candice Michelle is getting a bottle of water out of an ice bucket. And then there proceeds to be like a period of slow motion and porn music and like, so that's not funny, but what is funny is that, like, it cuts back to the two guys. They've obviously been given the direction that, like, there's a very attractive woman, she's, you know, dousing herself in ice cold water, you know, while wearing gear she was wearing, I can't remember, and So that's the look you have to have on your faces. And Jeff does a relatively kind of believable perverted stare. But Matt Hardy's face,
relatively believable.
Yeah, yes, yeah. He looks like an he looks like an actual human being, whereas like Matt Hardy's face is like he's a cartoon character. Like, it looks like Scooby-Doo has just seen a big sandwich.
Hey, if you're going to get my Hardy in trouble, Rebby Hardy in this year for this.
It's like, you're seeing Jeff and he's like, oh yeah. You're looking over Matt, who just looks hungry. And then, of course, you know, it's punctuated by Ron Simmons walking in between them, as did pretty much every skit at the time. But I remember just Matt Hardy's face during that was like, okay, I forgot what comedy chops this guy has. But that's basically how Charles Robinson looked in this segment. I have tears in my eyes just thinking about that now. Oh, God. Oh. Talk about this segment, Lee, while I recover.
I'm just thinking, is there a safe way for me to Google Candice Michelle on water? I don't think there is. But yeah, this segment.
And now, dear listener, you have to ask whether Lee cares about whether it's a safe way to search. Do you know what I'm going to do, right? I found the video.
Okay.
On YouTube.
So throw it up into the Discord.
I think yeah, it's just as good as I remember. Okay, I think I'm just going to tweet it out with no context from the Days of Thunder account.
Yeah, people are going to think that's me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, this backstage segment, I kind of missed a lot of the context here because I was also in the middle of doing something with the baby, so you're going to have to take this one. I don't even know what the whole point of this one was.
Okay, so this is like more about, Arn saying not to worry about the contract. And I loved the comparison he tried to make. Again, this is more Trailer Park Boys type ad-libbing where he's just like, Rick, don't just sign things without reading them. You wouldn't do that with any of your businesses. You wouldn't do that with your gyms. And I was like, ah, yes. Famously astute businessman Ric Flair. That's how you appeal to him.
I think that was a joke at that stage, even.
Yeah, it had to have been. So, because that's what he's like. Flair's response to this was to indignantly shout, I owe money to the banks for my gyms. So Rick urges him to relax, but Arn says his nerves are shot. Then we get our main event, WCW World Heavyweight Title Match, as Stevie Ray with Vincent makes his first ever challenge for the big gold belt against DDP with Kimberly. Gotta be said, there is kind of like everyone looks main event level here. Like Stevie, before you see him wrestle, does look like a main really event does, guy. Yeah. DDP, God, he wears the belt well, doesn't he, Lee?
Really does.
And Kimberly obviously looks great.
Just going to say, Kimberly adds so much to the act.
Yeah, I'm so glad she's now kind of like firmly part of the act.
And not dancing
like
anymore.
Like she'd been... When you got to the... where like the Steiner angle is where she really starts to like come back onto TV, associated with him. But I'm glad she's kind of stuck around because this is the Kimberly run, I guess, that I remember.
Yeah.
You know,
and look, like you said, she's just an incredibly beautiful woman, so I'm not going to complain about her being on the screen.
Yeah.
But I will say the DDP character over the past couple of weeks has just been so confusing. And it really has harmed the connection he has with the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Because they're happy, you know, but they could be happier.
Yeah, and it's so contrasting when you have Larry Zbysko on commentary just saying, oh, DDP is like a ray of light and this is, you know, so deserved and everyone's so happy. Like, the dude took out Hulk Hogan's knee. And Hogan was a face.
Mm-hmm.
What?
It's just been, and I guess we need to kind of get used to it. Everything is just gonna, like, every 6 weeks there's just a massive reset. I don't know if someone's getting concussed and completely forgetting everything, but it's not even a reset, because a reset implies that there is, like, they're going, okay, here we go, but it's not, because it's like they don't remember.
It's like the whole Hogan and Flair double turn just offset everything else in the main event scene. Like, Nash was a heel with Hogan, but then Hogan was facing teaming with Nash. Flair was the face who was teaming with other faces that had now turned heel, but still had to team with faces to take on, or to team with Goldberg to take on Nash. And it's all just, it's thrown everything into fucking confusion. You have Sting coming back as a mega face. DDP, who had turned heel for no apparent reason. But now DDP is now a face again, and Sting is now aligned with Randy Savage, and nobody's quite sure why. Yeah. It's just, everything is just kind of out of sync, and it never really settles back down.
It's like there's just a bunch of scenes missing.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what it's like, or like they just threw the scripts up in the air and filmed them in random
Instead
order.
Instead of just going, Goldberg is our guy, everyone should be sacrificed to Goldberg, they've just decided, let's just do this for this week and see where we go.
Yeah. Like I said, it really cut the legs out from underneath what should be, you know, if you were a fan of the Paige arc since the beginning of this show, which we were, it really cuts the legs out from underneath what should be a victory lap, you know? This starts off really intense, which I liked, shoving, punches and the likes. Stevie stumbles into the ropes off a punch and out of the ring. DDP does a plancha onto Stevie and Vincent at once, which gets the crowd going. Hits a noggin knocker. Stevie and DDP brawl up to behind the commentary table. Stevie's thrown into the crowd. DDP then, at one point, they're kind of wandering back to the ring and Vincent's in the way, and he just lamps Vincent a few times.
I don't even think you're supposed to. I think Vincent just got too close to them.
Yeah, he just didn't. Just like, fuck off, out of the way, pal. Stevie clubs him from behind and we're back in the ring. Hits a cross chop to Paige's throat. Cross chop is something we don't see enough in wrestling.
Darby's a big proponent of the cross chop. Darby does it a lot, doesn't he?
Darby is. He is, yes, he does. We get a bear hug from Stevie. Paige fights out but runs into a sidewalk slam, which is a really good sidewalk slam. And this is where it kind of went, you know what? Like, it's not a classic, but I'm enjoying this match. I think it's delivering. I think it feels like, you know, not a pay-per-view level main event, but it feels like a TV main event title match. You know?
It's fine. Look, it wasn't awful.
Yeah. No. I think, like, on the Stevie scale, it's on the upper end. Paige hits a neck breaker, lariat on Stevie, takes Vincent off the apron. Stevie kicks him and goes for the slapjack, but reversed into a big back body drop. Stevie whips him into the ropes, float over diamond cutter for the win. And then we get, Lee, had you missed the NWO brawl to end the show? Because you got it in spades here.
Did they ever stop?
I don't know. It feels like maybe they stopped for a couple of weeks here and there. Vincent jumps him right at the bell, although Vincent had clearly, like, nearly got into the ring too early and then just froze completely. Adams and Horace out too. Double clothesline on Adams and Vincent. This is, I like this end because I thought, like, they were going to get the baby faces out and it was just going to schmoz and we'll go off the air like that. But DDP just fights off the entire B team by himself. Double clothesline, Adams and Vincent, and a diamond cutter on Vincent.
Yeah, the new world champion just took out the heels. It was kind of good booking.
Him and Kimberly celebrate, and he's kind of like instructing Kimberly to walk around with the belt and show the crowd his big shiny belt. So, like, as an angle, as a kind of, here is your new champion, he is the best. He is the best there is. I think it did very well. And like we said, you know, for a Stevie Ray singles match, I think it was perfectly fine.
Yeah, to be fair, like, I went in expecting not very much and it was above average.
It was better than
not very much.
It was the
Mike Sanders of world title matches.
Oh, okay. There's a man who's not in the not too distant future coming on our radar. Lee, overall thoughts on the show, winners and losers, please.
Look, I said at the top of the show, it's a show that I didn't hate. There was a lot of stuff not to like on it, the show, but in spite of that, I still enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I got a good sleep halfway through, multiple times.
You did. You got three or four good sleeps.
I think the winners on the show for me are DDP. Again, in spite of the mixed signals, I think the close of the show with him just standing tall over the re-established black and white is a good look.
Mm-hmm.
I think Raven and Saturn just come across as the coolest guys in the world on the show.
Yeah, they were going to be mine, for sure.
I think the biggest loser on the show, unfortunately, is Wrath. Poor dude.
Wrath, yeah, the poor guy can't catch a break because he's only back 6 months or so from his last injury. I would also add Mikey Whipwreck to that through no fault of his own was just like had what remained of his credibility just shot to shit by Larry.
Look, I think overall a decent show, a decent episode.
Our finish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga has this show with 7 matches, 6 clean finishes and 1 count out. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. We will return on the free feed in 2 weeks with our next episode. But if that is, if you want a bit more of us in 1 week, we will be back with Black and Gold Season 2 on the paywall on Patreon, alargemanappears.com. But until then, my friends, thank you very much for listening and we shall speak to you again soon.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. To keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us, you can follow us on Twitter at WCWThunderPod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks. Can you hear?